Matthew tells us that Jesus begins his public ministry walking along the Sea of Galilee. And there he sees ordinary people doing ordinary work. They're casting out nets. They're mending them. They are making a living under Roman occupation. And he says the simplest and most disruptive thing imaginable. Follow me. And against all logic and reason, they actually do. Now, it's not as idyllic as it initially seems, though. Matthew sets the scene like this. Now, when Jesus heard that John had been arrested, he withdrew to Galilee. This is how the story begins. John has already run afoul of the authorities for speaking too plainly about power and repentance and justice. Jesus knows exactly what kind of world he's stepping into. He knows what happens to the prophets. Yet he begins anyway. And then comes that familiar phrase, "I will make you fish for people." Or as many of us remember from earlier translations, "I will make you fishers of men." For many of us, that phrase sounds comforting, pastoral, almost gentle. Many have taught that it's a metaphor for evangelism, a call to go out into the world and save souls. But biblical scholar Chad Myers reminds us that this is one of the most misunderstood images in the Gospels. Because in the Hebrew scriptures, fishing for people is not about recruitment. It's all about judgment. And he's right. Jesus is drawing directly from the prophets. In Amos, God warns the wealthy women of Samaria who oppress the poor and crush the needy that they will be dragged out of water like fish and taken away with hooks. And then in Ezekiel, Pharaoh himself is portrayed as this great sea monster who God is going to hook, pull from the river, and expose, weak and stripped of all of his imperial power and pretense. Fishing, in other words, is what God does to unjust rulers and exploitative systems. God exposes them, God hooks them, and God drags them away. Not so gentle and serene, after all. So when Jesus tells these fishermen that they will become fishers of people, he's not organizing them to go door to door, handing out tracts, sending them out to grow a movement. He's inviting these people, these common people, to participate in God's confrontation with power and privilege. He's calling them into a struggle that will help expose and unsettle and ultimately overturn an unjust order. And for me, this reframes everything. These disciples are not escaping from the world as they know it. No, far from it. They're being sent deeper into that world. And the world that they inhabit is one where Rome extracts wealth from poor, where elites collaborate with empire, and where violence is the normal language of control. Into this world, though, Jesus doesn't lead an armed rebellion. He doesn't raise up forces to crush the oppressors. No, Jesus responds with a proclamation of what Matthew calls the kingdom, or better, the empire of God. It's a profoundly different view and different way of ordering life. And Jesus' counter-reign, it's rooted in healing instead of hoarding, in mercy instead of domination, and in shared abundance instead of scarcity that is enforced by fear. And that's dangerous. Jesus is dangerous. Because anytime people align themselves with the empire of God instead of human empires, whether they're political or economic or cultural, it becomes risky. Christians throughout history have gotten a reputation for being troublemakers. They wouldn't offer incense or sacrifices to the Roman gods. They shared their possessions with absolute strangers. They harbored enemies of the state who were facing unjust persecution. The problem isn't Christian morality, but the fact that unjust systems do not tolerate being named for what they are. We have seen over and over again how good empires are at crucifying those who challenge their legitimacy. We are seeing that reality again in our own time. Recently, an Episcopal bishop in New Hampshire, Rob Hirschfield, made national news after advising clergy to prepare their wills. He warned his flock that he thought a new era of martyrdom was coming. In speaking at a vigil after Renee Good was fatally shot by an ICE agent, he named what many are feeling, but struggling to say out loud, that bearing witness to cruelty and injustice is beginning to carry a real physical risk. I'm just asking you to live your life without fear of death, he later clarified. Be prepared. I'm not asking you to go look for that bullet. His words have landed in very different ways with different people. Some clergy felt profound relief, gratitude that somebody was finally giving voice to the fear sitting down deep in the pit of their stomach every time they pray or protest or show up publicly for the vulnerable. And one priest I know pushed back on this hard, saying, I didn't sign up to be a martyr. I have a family and a congregation who rely on me. If I was gone tomorrow, what would happen to them? He went on to say, we're called to do the work of peacemaking and to de-escalate the tension we see all around us because it doesn't serve anyone to become the next victim. But it does serve everyone to build the next bridge. The tension that this bishop's statements have drawn from people matter. And unfortunately, the gospel doesn't resolve it for us. But here is something that we must say clearly. The way of Jesus is not about seeking martyrdom. The church has never taught that faithfulness requires reckless self-destruction. Jesus himself regularly slips away from danger when the time is not quite right. Courage is not the same thing as courting harm. And just as importantly, the way of Jesus is always nonviolent. The prophets that Jesus draws from, Amos and Ezekiel included, are fierce in their language, but they do not call for a violent uprising. And Jesus follows that same path. He refuses the sword. He rejects domination, even if it would save his life. The empire of God does not come by mirroring Rome's violence. It comes by exposing it. And that means that bearing witness can take many different forms. Some people are called to public, visible resistance, like marching and speaking and organizing and standing in those hard places. And others are called to quieter, stubborn faithfulness, like feeding people, sheltering the vulnerable, and accompanying those that the system discards. Others bear witness by refusing to profit from injustice, while others sit in difficult conversations long enough to tell the truth without giving up on love. No one is better than another. We need them all. When Matthew says that Jesus goes through Galilee teaching and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and curing every sickness and disease, he is showing us that God's reign is not abstract. It's physical. It reshapes communities. It confronts systems that are making people sick in the first place. And even today, just as plainly as it did on that shoreline, Jesus' call echoes to us. Follow me. Follow me into a faith that is not comfortable, but is honest. Follow me into a courage that is not reckless, but is real. Follow me into nonviolence that is not passive, but deeply active. The first disciples left their nets because they sensed that something more faithful than mere survival was at hand. They trusted that God's future was bigger than Rome's present. May we trust that too. And may we bear witness, each in our own way, to the dangerous and liberating and life-giving empire of God.